part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. Incredibly, what a weird morning.
Oh no.
Well, no, it's weird because I was just set up to do this whole thing, and then the gardener with the leaf blower comes running past my window, and I'm like, it's like, and so I ran upstairs, and then he stopped, and I was like, oh, I gotta run downstairs, and then the Zoom thing didn't work. I mean, the Google thing didn't work, and then it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. Obviously, maybe my computer doesn't like it or something.
I don't know. Absolutely not your fault. I mean, sometimes it works, and then sometimes it doesn't. I don't know what the situation is.
I'm not the most technical person, I will admit that. So I wouldn't be surprised if
You're the creator of the pandemic's comics, right? So by now you should be all set up, correct?
That is correct, yes. I'm just usually my partner helps me with technical things, but he's out today, so it was just me.
gotcha. Well, no, thank you for joining me. I didn't realize you were in the UK, so that's great.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were where you were, so I was like, oh, hang on, Los Angeles. But then it twigged, and I was like, oh, that's very early. I don't usually speak to people in America that early. And then I looked at what time it was for you, and it was like 2 a.m. I was like, I think you've got something wrong here, Smith.
That's great. That's great. Well, let me just first off start by saying that you are Rachel Smith. Rachel, correct? I got that right?
That is correct.
Hard to mess that up, but sometimes I will screw up name pronunciations like crazy. But Rachel Smith, you are the author of Good Game, Well Played, correct?
Correct.
I got the name right. That's great.
Yes.
and this is a new comic coming out in May, right? End of May?
I believe so. Yes. Yes.
End of May in the US and the UK.
I believe so. Definitely the US. Are most of your listeners in the US?
Actually, it's quite an international group. Like when I check.
Oh, wow, cool.
There's a lot of people in China. Hello, China, which they may be bots. Who knows? I don't know. But no, it's all over the world from, you know, when I look at stats and stuff like that. But I mean, I am a US based, you know, podcast, and we do tend to talk to US people more, but I, you know, I just had someone on from Norway a couple of weeks ago. I've done a lot of interviews in the UK. I should also say that this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast, and my name is Christian Horn. I always screw up the intro, but, what's the publisher on this book again?
It's Mad Cave Studios.
It's an imprint
of Mad Cave Studios called Maverick.
That's right. I've had several of their creators on before, and they do great work. Yeah, I saw Maverick on the cover, and I just got a little confused. So,
right.
That's great.
It's an imprint of theirs. So that, yeah. I think it's where they do their sort of more unusual stuff.
Unusual, really? Because this isn't I mean, I don't find it unusual. First, let me say off the bat that I love this book. Like, I just.
Oh, amazing. Did you get a chance to read it?
I did. I read the whole thing. I finished reading it this morning, like right before we got on. And I loved it. I mean, I'm actually quite surprised as to, well, not surprised. I mean, it's always lousy for me to say that because I don't know, maybe I'm just a jaded comic book reader and stuff like that. But this was like very sweet, very refreshing, very bright. It tackles like serious subject matters, but the art sort of like counterbalances that. Why don't we just start off by saying what it's about? Because I can't be effusive enough about it. Luckily, like I sometimes worry and somebody wants to come on the podcast and I'm like, this might not be great, but this was great. I really loved it.
I suppose when I say unusual, it's a difficult one to sell. I think it's
Oh really?
'Cause it's quite quite a subtle story, really. I mean, it's not about like monsters fighting each other or superheroes. It's quite, it's very coming of age. It's very, about a group of friends trying to find their place in the world. And then it's really hard to say too much about it without spoiling it. So yeah, I've just found it a difficult one to talk about, but, I mean, that's your job as the interviewer, is to ask the questions.
Well, no, I mean, that is, I mean, that's one of the things that while I was reading it, it's like, how do I get into this without spoiling it? But I mean, the basic thing that sort of comes to mind, I mean, it's about a bunch of young people working in a video game store, right? So it reminded me a little bit of like, say, something like Empire Records or like that kind of like movie, but with a bit.
They kind of, it's a group of friends working in a video game store in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it's got some like little nostalgic nods back to those times. And they get the news that their shop is going to be closed down by the owner. So they have to kind of all pull together and come up with, you know, wacky plans to try and save it. But on top of that, all the kids are going through their own sort of, they have their own sort of demons to slay in their own lives as well. So, they all go through the same thing in quite different ways.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, like I said, I mean, it's great. It's really, you've built a lot of like really fun and interesting characters. It's funny because when I was reading it, your main character the name is
Sienna.
Yeah, Sienna. She's sort of like the leader of the pack, right? She's the one that like pulls them all together. I guess would she be considered like the manager of the shop or?
She's the one that does most of the work. She's the most sort of She loves the shop.
I mean, it just really struck me like how well you did a great job with that particular character, because it seems like that character is like very together, very much, you know, the standard heroine of like a story or comic where she's got like everything in line and pulling, you know, all the strings and gathering everyone together and making the plans. And then by the time you sort of get to the end of the book, you're addressing something completely different with that character. I mean, they all have their sort of, youthful problems or things that they're dealing with. But it was, what was really interesting to me is how you sort of took and, in my mind, like the Captain America character, right? The character that pulls the Avengers together and gets every, like, hey, we're going to do this. Or like the Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney, you know, we're going to put on a show and we're going to save the barn, you know, like that sort of thing. And it becomes a little bit sort of a different thing. And you're like, oh, wow, that was really well done, if I may say so.
Thank you so much. No, that's a really nice thing to say. Thank you. Often the kind of, so I think if this was a prose novel, then Sienna would probably be the narrator. She's that sort of character. It's very much a lot of from her point of view of things. And often the narrators are kind of the hardest to write because it's usually from the most sensible character that a story is told, because you want the other more wacky ones to be in the story more. So I'm really glad you said that. I tried to make her kind of well-rounded in that way, in that sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the basic story of the graphic novel is that you have a bunch of young people, they're working in this video game store, and what ends up happening is that the sort of owner, proprietor of the store is having trouble paying his rent. And so their goal, their big goal, sort of like the big brass ring that they're trying to achieve, is to save the video game store, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically,
but in doing so, it kind of highlights how different they all are and how they're all from very different walks of life, and they have their own problems with doing what Sienna needs them to do, really.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it very much, I mean, that's the thing that connected with me. I mean, I was probably around that age in the 90s. I don't know if you were as well, or if you know, the 90s has just become the big nostalgic thing now that the 80s yes. nostalgia might be waning.
Yeah.
I really identified with a lot of the characters, in particular, the blonde character, like sort of
Hope.
Yeah, mm. Hope. Yeah. Can you speak to me a little bit about where she comes from? I mean, which one do you identify with the most?
I think probably I'm most like Sienna.
Okay.
I hope I'm a little bit more kind of self-aware than she is, but you know, I'm a lot older than she is, so maybe I was more like her when I was growing up.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, my background is certainly more Sienna-ish. You know, I had a very privileged upbringing, was quite middle class, and I think Sienna forgets to remember that not everyone has the advantages that she does. She's a really, really nice person. She wants to do good in the world, but I think, yeah, she does forget that not everyone has the same chances. And yeah, her relationship with Hope was one of my favorite kind of relationships to write, because they are so different, but they do love each other so much. And yeah, I think kind of, so there's, we kind of get into, I won't say exactly what happens, but like there's a bit of an ethical quandary, and Sienna has this very, very black and white kind of idea of what is right and what is wrong, and Hope does something that in her mind is very wrong, but then, you know, that is a very privileged way to think. Like, it's a very easy for people like Sienna to abide by all the rules and still get what she needs out of life, and Hope, you know, isn't there, so she kind of, Hope kind of opens her eyes to her way of living and how she is kind of struggling to get by. Hope's my favorite. I don't know if you could tell. I'm not supposed to have favorites, but Hope's my favorite character.
Well, I identified with your favorite character then, because that was the one that I felt for a while in my like early 20s, where I was just like, what am I doing? Like, how am I going to pull all this together? Like, very much that stuff. I mean, I don't want to spoil any of the characters, but again, I thought you did a really great job of like balancing, like, first of all, character development, like really great stuff. Mm-hmm. And then balancing the struggles that they're dealing with. And then also kind of the whole thing, like just the goals that they're trying to achieve with the shop, you know, because I mean, it would be easy to make something like this just all about video games or gaming, but you did not do that. It's like the gaming shop is almost secondary.
Yeah, I liked the, oh, thank you. You said a lot of nice things there. Thank you very much. I'm glad. Okay. I'm glad we don't have the video on this, because you can, you'll be able to see me blushing. The video game sort of motif, I liked, kind of used that as as a sort of allegory for what they're going through. Like, there's a couple of conversations they have, for example, where they are playing a game. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about real life things. And I liked playing with that kind of thing a lot. But yeah, you're right. The video game shop could be, you know, a bookshop or something. I didn't want to do the whole a comic set in a comic shop. I didn't want to
want to go quite that close?
I didn't. And I liked having the video games to kind of play with. And, the kind of idea that everyone has their own, like, leveling up to do in life. And I liked that sort of, yeah.
That's great. No, I mean, I would imagine that at some point, I mean, I worked in a video shop, like a video rental shop in New Jersey when I was growing up. I mean,
very 90s job there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was more like, for me, it was like late 80s. Yeah. Early 90s. Yeah. But how about yourself? Did you work in a shop like that as well? I mean, I would imagine a lot of us did at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of part-time jobs growing up, some of them being in shops. I never worked in a video game shop. It was not quite the same, but sorry, I've completely lost what I was saying. What was the question? I'm so sorry.
No, it's totally fine. I guess, for me, like, that was sort of the thing, like waiting tables, you know, I've done that as well. Working like retail, like in a video shop or something like that. like the different types of people that all kind of like brings together and that come in and out of your life. And it seems like such a special time, right? Like when you're young and you're trying to figure stuff out and everything seems so full of kind of like drama and you're like, am I ever going to get through this? And, you know, luckily I'm not going to spoil anything, but most the characters do. And, you know, it's just such a really great, I mean, you said it earlier, coming of age story. Were you pulling from your own experiences or experiences of friends or like that sort of thing? I mean, I would imagine so, correct?
Sure, yeah. I certainly borrowed a lot from my memories of friendships when I was that age and, you know, kind of being aware that everything is in a sort of transitory state, like everything's about to change a lot, but maybe half being excited about that and half not wanting things to change. I think that kind of, yeah, that becoming an adult is a really interesting thing to write about because it is such a, like, it's just a really, I found it very difficult. I'm sure lots of people found that very difficult, this sort of becoming an adult and figuring out what it is you want to do and finding your place in the world. And yeah, I mean, some people will treat you like adult and some people will still treat you like a child. And it's a lot of pressure, I think, on people that are that age. And I think even now, maybe especially now, you know, last week I was in school and I had to ask permission to go to the bathroom. And this week, suddenly I'm being asked what I want to do with my life, like what my career is. And sure. I have no idea. Like, I've not been given any agency for that up until now. And now it's suddenly it's all to play for. And I don't know, I think like when you're in that situation, having that sort of summer job to kind of escape to and just be yourself and just be a bit wacky and a bit silly was really nice. And I tried to capture that and tried to capture how Sienna doesn't really want that to end. She wants everything to just stay that summer forever, but
it can't. Sure. It's funny though, because I mean, it's set in the US and there's an interesting thing that I've started noticing because I have interviewed creators from overseas and the universality of it. I don't know if I'm using the correct word. I know words, I can use words, but like the universal appeal of this, you know, again, I said earlier, I mean, I didn't realize you were in the UK and that's a lot because of what came through in the book. I thought you were American. Like, I was like, oh, this seems like a very American experience. Can you talk to me about that at all?
Thank you. That's really nice. I did do some research about, you know, writing in that time and in that place. I was very lucky. Chris, my editor, was very good with helping me with that. There were some, like, I can't remember what they were now, but some things that I'd sort of had the kids saying, and he was like, oh yeah, kids in America wouldn't really say that. And so he helped me out with some of the kind of vernacular there. But yeah, I'm really happy that that's come across. It's not like an English person trying to do a bad American accent.
No, it does not come across that way. I mean, I thought, I was, when we kind of emailed and, you know, our signals got a little cross as far as time before we, you know, got onto this interview because you're like 8 hours ahead of me or something like that. I was like, wait, what? You're in the UK? Like, I was just kind of like shocked, but I'm impressed as well. I mean, like I said, this whole book very much impressed me. But you're a cartoonist as well, correct? I mean, you draw as well, but you didn't draw this. Is there a reason behind that? Or I mean, the art is beautiful, and the artist's name, I should say, gorgeous. Is it Catherine Lobo?
Catherine Lobo, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't actually remember if we had that conversation, but no, I was always just going to write this when I was approached by Chris. I think they always had Catherine in mind for writing. I don't know if they shopped around very much there, but like Catherine has just made my dialogue really come alive. She's such a talented artist. And like seeing the pages come in, like after I'd sent the script in, I was then able to just watch the pages come in, and every time I got a new page, it was like opening a present. It was so wonderful. I don't know. I worked very hard to try and make those characters very real, especially with the way they talk to each other.
Sure.
And I was like, I think I've done a pretty good job there. And then when I saw the pages, I was like, holy cow, like these characters are now it felt like they were going to walk out of the page and start talking to me. I was like, wow, she's really put some magic in this. Like, it's been a really nice collaboration.
Yeah. But as an artist, when you're writing, I mean, in your head, does it look like a particular thing? And is it strange to sort of get work from an artist with, you know, decidedly different style than, you know, what I was able to find online for you, and be like, oh, wow, that's not exactly how I pictured it. And then, you know, just be fine with it, because obviously the artwork is great, but I'm sure that you have something in your brain where you, you know, thought of it in the way that you thought of it. Correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to sound like I'm lying, but honestly, there wasn't anything that I wasn't thrilled with from Catherine. There wasn't anything that came through that I was like, oh, not sure about that.
Sure.
Or that wasn't how I pictured it or anything. Like, no, she'd gone above and beyond what I would have been able to do with it. I don't know if you're aware. So the character in the book, he is a cartoonist.
Yes.
So the cartoons that he draws, those are my work.
Oh, that's right.
We made that decision because my stuff is so different from Catherine's. So yeah, my stuff is very cartoony. Everyone has big googly eyes and very over the top, which I'm
cute,
not sure,
and charming stuff.
Very cute. Yeah. Oh, thank you. But yeah, I'm not sure it would have been the best choice for this book.
Yeah.
I think it's better to have something a little bit more realistic, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Again, the artwork. Yeah,
I was able to do some drawings. But,
that's great. Yeah. No, that's great. So, but I mean, how is a creator for you, creating your own comics and making your own comics? How do you decide, like, this is what I'm just going to write on, and then this is what I'm going to write and draw? Like, is it more? Because I mean, this story does seem personal in a way. I mean, it's not autobiographical. Mm. But your quarantine comics, which is that's another one of your books that you work on that mm-hmm. isn't tied to this, but you write and draw those. And then I would imagine maybe there's a part in your brain where it's like, I just want to write this. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Sure. I usually, if I'm not doing everything, I do usually do just the drawing.
Uh-huh.
So there's a book called The Queen's Favorite Witch, which we're just working on volume 2 of that at the moment, actually, that my friend Ben Dixon wrote and I drew.
Oh.
And again, I really enjoy that. I really enjoy collaborating with people on things like that. But a lot of my stuff, I do everything. My kind of, my autobiographical stuff, like Quarantine Comics and Wired Up Wrong has just recently come out. And there's another one coming out soon called Stand in Your Power. They're all with Icon Books, based in London. It makes sense to me that I would do all of that because it's my life. So
sure.
I do that. I've written a book that I'm illustrating at the moment called Isabella and Blodwyn, which is about a young girl that goes to the university in Oxford and meets a witch, comes into contact with this witch who's just absolutely bonkers. I've had a lot of fun drawing Blodwyn. She's really crazy looking. She's great. I don't know. I think my stuff suits things like that, things that are a little bit off the wall, a little bit silly. Where I can get a bit cartoonish and silly. And yeah, I'm not, like I say, I don't know if that would have been the right choice for this book. I'm really, really happy that they got Catherine. I think
sure.
It works a lot better for the kind of subtleness, I want to say. I'm not sure.
Sure.
Now, is
this something that you kind of like wrote on your own, or how did that work with Mad Cave? Did Mad Cave come to you? Did they find you, or you found them as a publisher and then you found the artist together, or like, how did that process work? Because again, I'm just curious to, as to someone who can obviously create their own stories and their own narratives, right? Doesn't necessarily need a publisher, you know, or to express their voice, because I mean, there's a difference between like just being a writer and it's like, oh man, I got to go find an artist. And then it's like, oh, I can write and draw everything together. How did that work for you?
Well, with this project, so Chris found me and asked me if I'd like to write something. He kind of had the seed of an idea. So yeah, he had the sort of some characters and the sort of setting. And I kind of just ran with what he had and built upon that. I wasn't involved in finding Catherine, but as I say, I'm very glad they did. but yeah, they were very much editorial decisions that I wasn't really involved with. I was just the writer.
Oh, interesting. So I'm you didn't get.
I was the writer.
yeah. Well, don't say it like that.
Nothing else was expected of me. Yeah.
No, I'm the writer. Damn it.
Like, I'm the writer.
Yeah. But so that's interesting. Did you don't get approval like on artist or anything like that? It's basically like you turn in your script and then the editors at Mad Cave like go find the artist, go find the letterer and the colorist and stuff like that.
In this occasion, it was
sure
it was like that. Yeah, I mean, I did get to see the pages come in. So if there had have been anything that I didn't like or was worried about, I'm sure I'd have been able to say that. But yeah, like I say, there wasn't any need for anything like that. So
sure. And then what experience do you have with, I mean, it sounds like you play, or at least in your bio, it says that you play video games and things like that. Like, did you have experience? I mean, I think that you are younger than I am. I mean, I grew up in the sort of like, you know, video game arcade era where you were putting in a quarter and then the Atari like shook the world. And then there was Intellivision and ColecoVision and like all these like, you know, home gaming systems. But did you grow up in that era? Like as far as like a video game store, I mean, besides GameStop, I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of stuff like that out there anymore. Did you have to, like, as far as like it being a video game store or being video games, were you into gaming or video games at like any time? And
yeah, I was big into video games when I was a kid. Uh-huh. My first sort of console was the Mega Drive, and I loved Sonic and all of that. And yeah, I was a big platformer. The arcades did kind of pass me by a little bit. But I don't know if that's because I was born in 85. So maybe was a little bit.
Well, you didn't have to reveal your age. I was trying
fine.
To be a gentleman. I'm 72.
Thank
so
you.
I'm very much older than you, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, I was quite, I was a bit of a loner as a kid. I preferred like staying in and playing games. I didn't really like going out to arcades and things because that would have meant talking to other
talking to people.
I'm much better at making friends now, thankfully.
Sure. But
yeah, back then I was like,
sounds like it.
Like, no, this is something I do by myself and it's me and Sonic.
Sure.
And then I got big into, I had a Game & Watch. Do you remember those? I had a Zelda, one of those.
What was it?
Game and Watch. It was sort of while they were figuring out Game Boys, it was kind of the first. But it was like, it was a bit more like a DS, like you opened it and you just, but my mum used to get so mad at me because I was just always on it. I was just looking at that all the time. Just you need to talk to people. So yeah, it certainly was like where I would go, you know, just to feel, I found it quite calming. And yeah, just made me feel good.
So you were doing smartphone thing way before there were smartphones. Like you were looking at
I hadn't sort of put that together really, how much it was like a DS that you opened it. But yeah, that's what it looks more like those, thinking about it now. It was a lot more chunky and blocky and
yeah.
Because it was really old. But
everything is much more slick now.
It is. Rounded edges on everything.
Yeah, that's true. The design has improved significantly.
Yes.
But what was it about gaming? I mean, it sounds like you said a little bit of it, that it was something that you could do by yourself and like sort of like escape into your own little world. Is that pretty much what you love or loved and maybe still love about it?
Definitely. It was like... I think you get that kind of sense of achievement as well. You know, you go through the levels and you feel like you're doing well at something. And there was a sense of that. And I would escape into these, you know, different worlds. Like Mobius looks really nice, especially the Green Hill Zone. It's nice to look at. It's nice to hang around in. And just things like that. I grew up in Stockport, which is near Manchester. It's very grey, very of concrete. Nice to go to Mobius, have some nice plants and animals and things.
Escape and stuff like that. What about comics themselves? Like
comics,
when did you discover those?
Very on brand. I read Sonic the Comic a lot. So yeah,
that's great.
Video games came first, and then comics related to that. And then eventually I started reading comics that didn't have the video game link, which was good. But I had a stage sort of in my late teens, very early 20s, where I kind of fell out with comics a little bit because I just thought I had these weird kind of prejudices, which I think a lot of people do now, even today. But I just thought they were all superheroes.
Yeah.
And that those kind of stories, although there are superhero stories that I do enjoy these days, but that didn't really appeal to me very much. So I was just like, oh yeah, it's just all Superman and I don't really want to read that. And then it wasn't until I read Scott Pilgrim. I think I was 22 or something. I remember thinking I was really close to the age that he is in the first book. And then the penny finally dropped. I'm such an idiot with some things, but I was just like, oh, comics can be about anything. Like I already knew I loved drawing. And I already knew that I loved writing stories. And I was like, well, why don't we just do comics? Because that's both of those things. And then you can do both at the same time.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's kind of how I crawled into my career.
That's
very slowly.
That's so interesting to me because, you know, I like to draw too. It's, you know, make comics and in my free time and stuff like that. And I mean, I was a hardcore like comic book guy, like, right? Like, I grew up with the superheroes. I love the superheroes. I mean, I love the other stuff too, but I definitely grew up in that era of like Marvel, DC, blah, blah, blah. And it's so funny because as I've gotten older, obviously comics have, you know, the comics market has expanded and grown and stuff like that. But there is such a weird part of me that still, like, it's such a part of my DNA where it's like, I still just like drawing the superheroes. You know what I mean? Like for me personally, like I love reading comics like yours, like your the quarantine comics too. I was taking a look at those and that stuff is great. And autobiographical stuff. I love Adrian Tomei, like Optic Nerve, you know, stuff like that. But for me, like, I remember years ago having this thing of like, if I didn't draw superheroes, like what would I draw? Like, I love going to museums. I love artwork. But for me personally, it's like, there's like a weird thing. And so for me, for you to say that, like you discovering comics, you liked to draw. What did you draw? Did you just make, and if you weren't making comics or out of your stories, like what were you drawing?
So when I was a kid, I would draw a lot of dolphins.
I loved dolphins.
So I but I would just draw all the time. Just draw and draw and draw as if it was something I just needed to get out of me. Like one of my mum's favorite things to talk about when people ask what I was like as a kid, she'd tell this story of like whenever I was on a long haul flight or something, if we're going on holiday. All they would need to bring is, for me, was like a ream of A4 paper, like, you know, those office supplies, you get them in the envelope.
Yeah.
And just give me that and a biro, like not even expensive stuff.
Yeah,
just
that
and a biro. And I would just sit for hours until someone would like remind me I needed to eat or something. But yeah, just a lot of dolphins, a lot of animals. As I got a little bit older, I got into stuff like Sailor Moon and things like that. So I drew a lot of, I kind of drew a lot of anime type things, which I think a lot of young girls do.
Sure, sure. When they're
in that stage of their life. Or boys, forgive me, or anything in between. I remember me and like my female friends doing it though. That's why I said that. So yeah, which, you know, and then, you know, Sailor Moon is a superhero. So maybe I'm talking out my ass, but so, yeah, they've certainly played a role. But yeah, a lot of like pretty girls, a lot of animals. And then as I got older still, just people. I used to love going to life drawing and practicing like gestures and things like that. Yeah, a lot of fantasy animals, like I'd make up animals and or dragons and things.
Oh, that's cool.
But yeah, it was a shame because I actually studied fine art at university.
Oh, okay.
And there it was kind of frowned upon to make things look a bit cartoony.
I know that.
Like
yeah.
Oil paintings. Yeah, you know the type of.
Yeah. Oh, no. Like, I've been through it. Our class in high school was miserable for me. It's like, I just want to draw comics. And they would be like, stop drawing Batman. And I'm like, just let me draw Batman. I want to draw Batman. Yeah.
But yeah, I found my way back to it eventually. But I do feel like I maybe should have studied something else, maybe illustration or writing or, you know, gone a different way. But.
Is it fine art as in like painting and stuff like that or like?
It was a bit of everything. We made some like, it was good. I did enjoy it.
Sure.
It was just a shame. Like teachers seem to think that it's such a lowbrow art form and it really isn't. It can be something really, really beautiful and you know, transportive. But yeah, we did some painting. We did videos. We did photography. So it was a nice, you know, I'm not saying I didn't learn anything, but
sure.
Yeah, no, it's great. It was great.
Sure.
I just wish they had a cartoon module as well, because it should be there. It shouldn't be frowned upon.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like at least during those school years, it may have been sort of a like a fight to like just stay in your own style and do, you know, because I mean, a lot of people, one of the things that I always find or you know, in these interviews or just in general, and I may have had this prejudice as well, which is like that cartoony art isn't necessarily as good as like, say, you know, the stuff that Marvel did back in the days, like with George Perez or Jose Luis Garcia Lopez and stuff like that, or the some of the big artists and particularly getting older and having kids and having time, like it's to me, the cartoony aspect of art is very liberating and very much like this is what I have time for. I'm going to do this. And it sounds like you may have experienced those thoughts from others as well, where it's like, oh, like this style of art, maybe there is truth that it may not be as complex as something like a Rembrandt or, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, there is validity to it and it is good. Can you speak to that a bit?
I mean, you've said a lot of good stuff there. I don't know what I can add really, but yeah, I think I know what you're saying. I mean, it's all subjective as well, isn't it?
Sure.
Certainly a lot of comic fans get quite protective over like their old favorites, but it's like just because a style has gone out of vogue a little bit. And, you know, I see a lot of like maybe mostly older guys on Facebook, they'll sort of be like, oh, why does everything look like Adventure Time?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, everything doesn't, but also why not? And when you actually ask them like, well, why not? It's not for you. It's for kids. And they like this style. When you actually question them on it, they kind of blue screen a little bit. And they're like, but I don't like it. And it's like, well, it's for kids. Sorry. And there's still a lot of people working in that, in the style, in the old Marvel style, as you say, like,
yeah,
there's still a lot of the same people still working that are kind of, you know, the old greats. So there's just room for everything, I think.
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the interesting things, and, you know, I've taken life drawing classes as well. And one of the things that those classes opened up for me, and particularly what I love about cartooning style, is you know, in the 90s, and you were speaking to those comic books in the 90s, it was very much like the cross-hatching and the very, and everyone's like, and the women are like, and everyone's like, you know, and and cartoony style is, you know, you look at the old Looney Tunes, you even look at some of the old Disney stuff. You, I love Steven Universe is something I discovered a couple of years ago with my daughter. And I'm blown away by the looseness of it. You know what I mean? And the sort of, you know, because I think when maybe you're younger and a lot of the characters in your book are dealing with the angst of what society is throwing at them, and you sort of start to build up walls around you. And to me, that sort of very stiffness in like maybe superhero books or certain things is a part of like that sort of like masculine, like, oh, I've got to, you know, put the walls up. And as I've gotten older and appreciated different styles of art, in particularly cartoony styles, the looseness is kind of like freeing and opening and like almost sort of like an opening of your heart space. Am I making any sense or am I just babbling at this
point? No, I was going to say the word freeing as well, actually. Like, yeah, like I said, there's no judgment on any art form. I mean, it's great to know all that, you know, all the like cross-hatching and they were always, you know, very like the muscles were always perfect.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
They obviously like gone to life drawing as well and knew all the anatomy rules and everything. And drawing like that must be amazing. But also it must be quite freeing to maybe have a day off and draw a unicorn whose body is a rainbow. You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's just whatever you have fun with. If you're not having fun while you're doing it, then I don't know.
So do you still have those pages and pages? Do you keep a lot of that stuff or do your parents or?
Oh, no, my mom, she used to keep everything. And then she moved into a smaller apartment and basically over lockdown, just, I think she got sick of looking at it because she was in the same four walls. So I think a lot of my old stuff has just been like tipped now, but that's fine. So yeah, I think I have a few little bits and pieces, but not very much.
Sure.
No, it is nice to see. It's a bit embarrassing as well though, isn't it? Like seeing your old art.
Yeah.
It's always very charming.
Yeah, it's very weird because I kept a lot of, I mean, I have stuff going back to like the 90s in a drawer. And for some reason, I can never get rid of it. Like someday this will be like some grand treasure that my daughter will love. And I'm like, whatever. I should just start giving stuff away, which is something I've been doing for friends. Like I've been sending them like old stuff and, hey, I thought you might like this. And,
nice.
But, for me, it's interesting to see like, again, how sort of like stiff and how many lines it was like, it's like a contest, right? Like how many lines can I get in this drawing, you know, mistaking lines for detail. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. I went through that phase as well. Like the more detail equals the better the drawing is.
Sure.
Like putting loads of folds in clothes that don't really need them and stuff like that. And whereas now I'm almost the other way around. I'm like, no, it's a better drawing if I can get what I want to get across in as few lines as possible, if anything.
But sure, sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But as I say, there's room for everything.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, it sounds like you've also been writing for a long time as well. I mean, did you always write stories or, I mean, even before you discovered comics or was comics, was Scott Pilgrim sort of like your gate to like opening that up for you? How did you discover writing?
No, I've always written and always drawn. It was Scott Pilgrim that was the gateway to actually putting those together.
Sure.
I suppose. But yeah, I've always like written short stories and things like that. I've always got ideas and I don't know, when I was, God, how old was I? When I was about, I think 12 or 13, I started writing a novel, which, shocker, never got finished because what kind of 13-year-old has that?
What was it about? Now you have to say what it was about.
It was about a girl who was raised by wolves.
Oh, cool.
And she had this kind of spiritual like link with wolves in her like DNA and stuff.
That sounds awesome.
It was all right, actually. I've got all the stuff for it somewhere.
I'll Are you going to make that into a comic? Because that sounds amazing.
I don't know.
No, I'm voting that you should make that one of your next books. That is Rachel Smith's idea. You, don't steal it.
I have realized that the premise is basically Turning Red, but with wolves instead.
Oh, I haven't seen Turning Red yet, which is bad.
Oh, okay. You must see it. You must see it. Okay. It's so good.
Gotcha. Oh, wow. No, I'm my family's away on a Girl Scout thing this weekend, so I'm not going to be watching it this weekend, but I need to watch it, which is, it's one of those things at the top of my list because it looks like a lot of fun.
It's so much fun. Yeah. Very good.
Well, I mean, besides Scott Pilgrim, thank you, Brian Lee O'Malley, for opening up Rachel Smith's creativity.
Cheers, Brian.
if you're listening, we'll see. Besides Scott Pilgrim, what are some of the other things that influence you? Because, I mean, this book, again, we'll say good game, well played. I mean, it does have a sort of, I mean, it seems a little manga inspired, you know, the artwork a little bit, not too much, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I actually love this style. It reminded me of, there was a Marvel artist. I'm totally blanking out on his name, and it's weird because he's one of my favorites, but he did a comic called Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane or something like that, or Mary Jane Loves.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. That's great stuff to go back and check out. I think it's Takashi Miyazawa, I'm probably totally messing that up, but it reminded me very much of that style, which he is one of my favorites. And now your artist is like, I'm going to be keeping an eye out for her because this stuff is wonderful, but I totally forgot.
I should have said this earlier. This was her first graphic novel.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. She draws like she's already a pro, but yeah, this was her first comic project.
Wow. Do you know how they found
amazing
her?
I don't. I should ask Chris. Yeah. Where did you find her? Where did you find this creature?
This person. No, that's great. That's great stuff. But I don't even know where I was going with that line of questioning. I had a thought and it just like went out of my mind. But I mean, as far as good game, well played, are these characters that you, because I mean, I really loved the book. I really loved the characters. Are these people that you would want to revisit at some point, or do you think it's done, one and done? I mean, because it seems like there's a lot of like interesting things that you could, you know, play or mess around with, or would you rather just like to go on to your girl who's genetically linked to wolves story that I want to read?
Okay. Yeah, I kind of feel like those characters in Good Game, Well Played, I feel like their stories have been told now. I would, like, if you know, Maverick wanted me to go back to them, I could maybe do some little short stories with them or something.
Sure.
But I'd be going back to, I'd want to go back to the 90s. I wouldn't want to carry on from where we left them.
Oh,
so,
okay.
There's quite a big time skip in the book.
Yeah.
So I would want to revisit that part of their lives if I did do it.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't say anything about that. That sort of like reunion aspect where the beginning of the book is one of the characters going back to a trip for a certain reason. It was reminding me a little bit of The Big Chill, right? Like they're going back for reunion. And you know, by that time they've kind of all grown up. How did you come up with that aspect of it? I mean, the idea of sort of like going back and like revisiting your past, because there, while I was reading it, I was like, oh, this big chunk of, you know, it works wonderfully, but why did you feel it's hard to talk about it without spoiling it, right? Because I mean, there's an aspect of the story, I will say, that doesn't play out sort of like your typical story. And then you get to the sort of present, you know, and I'm not saying that this is not like a downer book at all, but maybe things don't work out for certain characters the way that you, but then once they become adults, it's like, oh, they're okay in a way, right? Or at least most of them are. And I thought that was a very good message for what you were dealing with, or something to talk about, right? Because I think that there's so many people who are young that are caught up in the, for lack of a better term, I used it earlier and I don't mean to discount it, the drama of what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And I think that your book, for the audience that it's geared to, I mean, it's a great thing because at the end they will be like, okay, maybe it will be okay for me. Am I making any sense in saying that?
Yeah, I think I can say without ruining it, like, because you learn very early on in the book that Sienna is going back to, you know, where the shop is.
Sure.
For a funeral of one of her friends. Yeah. And then it becomes evident that it's one of the friends in the video game shop, but you don't know which one.
Yeah.
And then so many things happen to them and they go through so much in this little book that I kind of, with the time skip thing, I really wanted people, you know, by the time we're back on the flight with Sienna, I wanted them to almost be like chomping at the bit, just being like, I really want to know how things turned out for these people. I really want to know
whose
funeral it is. I was like, oh, and I wanted them to be going, oh no, I hope it's not this one. That was my favorite. Yeah. I hope it's not this one. And which is maybe quite mean of me, but I wanted you to kind of fall in love a little bit with my characters. And then,
I mean, that was one of the things that while I was reading, I was going along and I was like, and then maybe midway through the book, right? I was like, oh, wait, she's going to a funeral and it might be one of these people. And I was like, no, you know, and then once you make that realization, then you're running to sort of get to the end, right? You're running to be like, oh, wait, what? But you don't want to because you're enjoying your time with these characters so much. Again, it's just so well done. And I mean, I highly recommend it. I just think you've all done a great job with this book. I mean, Mad Cave Studios, the people that I've interviewed from them in the past, they seem to have really great taste over there because, again, I've liked the stuff that I've read from them earlier, but this was a very great book as well.
Thank you. Yeah, they're doing some really cool stuff. It's worth just keeping an eye on the whole company, I think.
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, any sort of final thoughts before we sign off? I mean, I've had you on for an hour. We did have a mix up with time because of time zones, the dreaded time zones. But I mean, I really appreciate you coming on. Any sort of final thoughts on Good Game Well Played?
Just to say, I'm really, really glad you enjoyed it because I think this would have been quite an awkward chat otherwise.
Oh, no. You know, there's variations, right? I mean, obviously, there's definitely times where you're going to read something and it's like, but, you know, you come on and you do the best that you can and focus on the positives. And I'm not here to disparage people's work, but I will tell you that I am not blowing smoke up your chimney when I say that this was a really great read. Like, I very much enjoyed it and had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I really hope people give it a chance. I think it's something really special.
Great.
And I think it will speak to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think you should pick it up, especially for like young teens and stuff like that, or people who might be in that age bracket who are going through the drama of their youth, I should say. But where can people find you online? Where can people find your work? Do you have a website? Is it mostly Twitter? Is it?
I'm Rachel_Smith on Linktree. So if you go Linktree/Rachel_Smith,
okay,
it's got like all my stuff there, my Twitter and my Facebook and things like that.
Gotcha.
It's probably easier. And it's Rachel spelled the awkward way, R-A-C-H-A-E-L.
That's great. Oh, thanks, I didn't even get a chance to ask you about your Doctor Who stuff. Like, come on. That's amazing. Okay. I love Doctor Who.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I used to do the humor comics for the 10th Doctor comic series from Titan. And basically what that means is I had like 3 or 4 pages to play with at the end of each issue, where I could just be a bit silly. And again, my kind of cartoony artwork wouldn't really go in the main interiors, I don't think, of Doctor Who, but for telling like a silly joke at the end, it fitted quite well. I used to write, so I wrote those as well. I basically used to pick one of the villains or one of the monsters and give them like a really contemporary job. So for example, I had an Ood who'd swapped out their like communication orb for a smartphone. So they were working at the Genius Bar.
Oh, like, my app. God.
I wasn't allowed to say app. I think I called it my phone or something.
Sure, sure.
But things like that, just silly jokes like that. And then it would play out and usually end in chaos. But, yeah, they were a lot of fun.
So are you still doing the quarantine comics as well?
I'm not. I'm sort of now and again, I'll go through a spate of like doing some diary comics just for my Instagram or my social media or something. So I did a comics residency in Prague last year.
Oh, wow.
So I documented that on like my Instagram and things. And that was very fun. But yeah, now I'm just kind of doing like, so Wired Up Wrong came out recently. And that is a book just about me dealing with my mental health issues, which come up a little bit in quarantine comics. But this is about, so yeah, just focusing on that. Without the added lockdown element.
Sure, sure. I was going to ask, what will you do? Well, I mean, is it over? I just never know. I mean, I was going to say, like, what will you do with quarantine comics now that it's kind of, I mean, I don't know that it's over. I feel like.
Yeah. Well, the book is still out. You can still get the book from anywhere that you get books. I did do a few more comics after the book came out. So I think I've got like 80 or something.
Oh, wow.
That I put online that didn't end up in a book. So I'm not really sure. I don't know. It seems a bit of a weird like add-on to publish that as well. Yeah, I kind of feel maybe I've done quarantine comics now and now I can move on to other things.
That's great.
I'm still really proud of the book we made though. There's 200 comics in the book.
Wow.
Yeah, quarantine comics with a X on the end instead of a CS. I don't know why I did that. It's made everything complicated. But yeah, quarantine comics spelled with an X.
Oh, wow.
By Icon Books. I'm really proud of what we did with that book.
That's great. No, I mean,
I get told that it helped a lot of people through because I was kind of.
I'm sure.
They were very relatable, some of them. And yeah.
Sure.
People kind of looked forward to them every day because they weren't doing anything else.
Yeah. Well, if you do the next 80 pages or next bunch, you should just call it, is it over yet? Because
yeah.
I need to know, like, is this over yet? When's it over? It feels like it's never over. It's never going to be over. But in any case, I will say thank you for your time. I really loved this book. Good game, well played. Coming out by Mad Cave Studios at the end of May, I believe. I don't have the exact launch date.
I think so.
In front of me, but you can go to Mad Cave Studios. I believe it's on there. You can check out their website, madcavestudios.com. Rachel Smith, thank you so much for joining me. Any final thoughts before we sign off?
No, it's been a delight. It's been a really nice afternoon.
Well, thank you. For me, morning, for you, afternoon. But you are welcome to come back on anytime. Anytime you have something to pitch, or please just reach out to me because it's been wonderful talking to you. I apologize for the time zone confusion. And
oh, no, it's fine. Maybe I could, when Isabella and Bloodwin is out, I could maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to have you on. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Again,
so
good game, well played. Rachel Smith, Mad Cave Studios. My name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time. I'm doing part-time.